Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I'm so glad you've joined me here again today for episode number 443. In just a moment, I'll be sharing with you a conversation I had with Dr. Jeremy Holloway, who is an assistant professor and director of geriatric education at the University of North Dakota. And he will tell us about his program to Legacy, which is a curriculum he created to help combat loneliness and social isolation for older adults. And it's an intergenerational curriculum. It's so interesting, and I'm really excited about the work that Jeremy's doing. So I think you'll enjoy our conversation and learning more about it. I want to remind you, if you listened to last week's interview with Johanna Lunn from whenyoudie.org, we talked about the third film in her trilogy on death and dying, and this film is titled Architecture of Death, The Inner World of Dying, and it has just started streaming this week. And on February 24th, so this is only relevant if you're listening when the episode first comes out, but on February 24th, 2024, at 6 p.m. Eastern, you'll be able to attend a live Q&A with William Peters and hospice nurse Julie answering questions. So if you get a ticket for the live Q&A, you'll receive a pass for screening the film on your own time during this next week, whenever it's convenient for you. And then you can attend the live Q&A on February 24th. I'm going to leave the URL is a little too long to mention here. So I will leave a link on the show notes page. You can just click on it, go there and get your tickets so you can see the screening of the film and also attend the live Q&A. So to get to the show notes, go to eolupodcast.com. Look for this episode number 443, and you'll see a link there to get your tickets for this event. And I hope you'll do it. It's a great film. I've had the chance to screen it already. It's really beautiful, as are the first two films in the series as well. So I encourage you to take part if you have a chance in this event. It will really be worth your time. And if you haven't listened yet to my interview with Johanna Lunn from last week, you may want to go back and hear more about how and why she created these films. One of my passions is education. We need to educate the public about death and dying issues and grief and afterlife by having lots of conversations about them. And I believe film and the media in general are one of the best ways we can put factual, positive information out there around death and dying, but also stimulate conversations and encourage people to learn more about this topic, which sort of mystifies most people in our society. So by supporting filmmakers and the work they do, we're encouraging them to keep putting out content like this. So if you're able, go to this film screening, and in upcoming episodes, I'll be talking about other films as well that are available. I also want to remind you, just in case this is of interest to you, I have created some gift guides with gift suggestions for people who are grieving, people who are caregivers, and people who are receiving care, just because those very special people in our lives are people we still want to buy gifts for, but we need to be able to think of something thoughtful and appropriate that fits the situation that they're in right now. And we just passed Valentine's Day, but the Easter holiday is coming up, Mother's Day, Father's Day, plus there are always birthdays and anniversaries, times when we want to celebrate by giving someone a gift. So you can check out the gift guides. I've just linked to things that I think might be thoughtful or helpful to someone in this situation, and you can scroll through. Maybe it will inspire you or help you think of a special gift that you could give to someone that you care about. So again, go to eolupodcast.com, and those are the show notes, and you can look for the link to gift guides and just check that out if you're interested. And finally, I want to thank my newest supporters on my page at patreon.com/EOLU, Megan Baird, Alita Merrill, and Lynn Wittenberg. Thank you so much for becoming part of our community on Patreon and making a generous contribution to help keep this podcast on the air. I really appreciate it. I'm sending out all my love and gratitude to all of you who've been supporting this Patreon page for a few years now. Also, those of you who have bought me coffees and made donations through PayPal. I appreciate all of you, and your support means everything to me. I did want to let you know about the Patreon page, because it's unique in that when you join the community on that page, you receive some benefits. For one thing, depending on the tier level at which you join, there are some physical benefits, some physical bonuses you'll receive through the mail, a sticker, a little mini poster, or a mug. And also, every month, everyone who's part of the Patreon community gets an end-of-life news update where I curate some of the latest topics in the news around end-of-life issues, death, dying, grief, the afterlife, all of those topics that we talk about. And you'll also receive a couple of new bonuses. One is called What to Watch. Every month I send you a list of interesting things you'll find on television, on the streaming networks or the regular television networks that you might enjoy watching that have to do with the topics we talk about here. And again, this is all part of my idea to help support creators who are making really good content that deals with death, dying, grief, and the afterlife. And the more we watch media like this, the more creators and broadcasters will decide, oh, this is a good thing to do. People want this content and they're watching it. So I feel it's important that we support it. So my Patreon community every month gets a little list of things to watch during the month that I've found that I think might be of interest. And also from time to time, bonus content. Like sometimes I have little extra excerpts from the interviews that I do that didn't make it into the regular podcast. And I'll share those with the Patreon audience. Sometimes I make some other informational tutorials or things. So if you join the community, there are some benefits for being part of it. And that's at patreon.com/EOLU. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, just in case you weren't sure about that. So thanks in advance if you decide to come along and join this community. So now we're going to move on with my conversation with Dr. Jeremy Holloway. I hope you enjoy it. I'll be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to welcome my special guest, Dr. Jeremy Holloway. Jeremy is an assistant professor and director of geriatric education at the University of North Dakota. The focus of his research is concentrated on the social determinants of health, specifically self-efficacy, connectedness, and resiliency of older adults. Dr. Holloway developed a curriculum that helps combat the social isolation and loneliness of older adults. He is also an advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion, especially regarding social determinants of health for all peoples. And you can learn more about Dr. Jeremy Holloway at his website, which is jeremyholloway.com. And his program, To Legacy, which we'll be talking about today, the website for that is telegacy.org, T-E-L-L-E-G-A-C-Y. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Karen. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Well, yeah, I've been really excited about your work, and particularly because you address the implications of social isolation and loneliness, which for a few years now, I've been reading a lot about these topics and how important it is for health. But I thought maybe we'd start initially by just asking what drew you in to work in geriatrics in the first place?
Yeah. You know, if someone asked me a few years ago, you know, would you be in, if I'd be in geriatrics, I'd say, wow, I don't know. But, what happened was around March 2020, I was finishing my dissertation, and I learned about older adults who were socially isolated and alone. And during that time, my dissertation was focused on helping underserved communities, underrepresented groups. And I, something really, struck me in a good way because I realized later that older adults are one of and socially, not only feeling socially isolated and alone during the pandemic, but they're an underrepresented group, especially in the United States, underserved. And, that gap is getting wider when it comes to the types of individuals that we respect, the type of individuals that we listen to and value. That's the whole reason why there's social justice groups, because there's certain individuals or groups that hadn't been listened to. And so when you have social justice groups, it helps give those people a voice. But I learned during the pandemic that older adults were definitely, I think, there's a lot of their voice being left out of the narrative of what's happening in the country. So I decided to jump on board and do some things about that. And that got the attention of University of North Dakota, and now I'm a geriatric professor.
Wow, I really love that. And if as I was thinking about it and thinking about your work, I realized really this idea of social isolation and loneliness, it's kind of a hidden problem in a way, because the people who are isolated, there's no one they can tell or talk to about what's happening to them. And we go about our busy lives day to day doing what we do and don't recognize how many people out there are really suffering from loneliness. And as I said, I've been reading a lot of articles recently that it's coming to attention, it seems like. And so I was wondering if you would share some of the research that's been done around social isolation and loneliness.
Yeah, I'll start with my own program. So I founded a program called To Legacy, which you mentioned, and it's an intergenerational program connecting university students and healthcare fields with older adults. And we're also finishing up a scoping review, which basically looks at historically how intergenerational programs, especially those focused on health, helping older adults and working with healthcare students, how is that impacted communities. And so we have found that intergenerational programs help to decrease social isolation and loneliness. There's also a lot of research around blue zones. And so blue zones are areas in which a proportionately larger population of older adults are living beyond 100 years old. And so some things found in that research in looking at those different blue zones are that social connection are one of the factors that really provide longevity and healthy aging, so success in healthy aging, and also of course dietary habits as well. And these things go into social determinants of health, which have a lot to do with the environment one lives in, their social group, and also their education, and there's other factors as well. But I mean, there's so much there when it comes to the research. But here's the good news, that it's kind of all connected. It's all connected. I think sometimes the complicated is also very simple. We're social beings, so we're meant to make an impact on others in a positive way. And when we're not doing that, it can affect our health. And so and then these things are connected. So let me give you an example. So the research shows that social isolation and loneliness affects there's many negative health effects equivalent to, for example, one study found that loneliness is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And loneliness has other disparities that I could, the list goes on and on. But one thing that's important that is affects one's self-esteem. It can affect one's self-efficacy. So the reason why I share that is because when one feels like they're not someone worth the attention, they're not going to seek that attention. They're not going to reach out. Like, man, that person's lonely. How come they're not calling anybody? Well, their loneliness is affecting their self-esteem, their self-worth, and so they're wondering why no one else is reaching out to them, and they don't feel like, well, maybe no one wants to talk to me, so why would I want to reach out, to get disappointed? And that affects their dietary habits. Why would I try to invest money in really good, healthy foods if I don't feel like, maybe I'm a person no one really values, so, maybe I just eat crap, for a lack of a better word. So there's research, but there's also really plain things I think that everybody can take a look at and to change their life.
I really like the fact that your program is intergenerational, because it's not just that we're benefiting the older people that are part of the program, but it's a huge benefit to young people who have a chance to be the connectors and connecting with the older people.
Absolutely. And I'm actually an advocate for helping geriatrics to be something that a lot of students, especially students in healthcare fields, but a lot of students learn, at least to the extent of healthy aging and educating healthy aging, because I mentioned previously about ageism, that older adults were considered as a underrepresented group because a lot of our society doesn't value the older population as much as they could in the United States, and social media sometimes doesn't help. So I think it's important that students ahead of time are introduced to concepts such as pursuing what matters to them for healthy aging over time. Their goal should be to age well, and so it shouldn't be something that society kind of ignores the reason why it's ignored by osmosis. No one intentionally does it when they're younger, but it's because society only reinforces things that say when you're younger, that's the only thing that matters. And of course, the older you get, the more you like that's malarkey. So like life matters from the beginning to the end. So anyway, that's something I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, and I love that we will all age one day, and it's never too late or never too soon to start focusing on how do we age well, and then looking at our own elders and what are they experiencing in life. But I do remember myself in medical school, medical training, that geriatrics was everyone's least favorite rotation, and no one told us why it shouldn't be. No one kind of sold us on that, why it's really important for us to learn to work with older people. And so I see that the bias that has been there through the training, and because we had a negative view of older people, we resisted working with them, and that did not help us at all to overcome some of that, the stigma and bias.
And especially today with the growing population of baby boomers. My wife is a nurse, and when she graduated and received her degree, the first place that she worked after that was a nursing home. So, unless someone's in pediatrics, 80%, we have some studies that show 80% of their clientele are going to be older adults. Yet they're, like you just said, perfect. The trainings and preparations. I don't know. I don't understand why, but they don't tend to help students prepare for interacting with older adults. And there's a lot of geriatric training that can be useful when one graduates and goes into the workforce, and with 80% of the folks they serve being older. So.
Yeah, for sure. Because I remember being told the best teaching patients are younger patients who are otherwise healthy but have some sort of rare disease. That's how you're going to learn the most, because you're going to learn about rare diseases. But it's like, what kind of sense does that make when, as you said, 80% of the people actually end up being older individuals with common diseases, and that's where where all of our focus should be.
Yes, it's such a, it's so, and another practical entity that I feel like is needs more attention is that a lot of the training, whether it be medical training with future physicians, et cetera, family, doctors or nurses, et cetera, a lot of the training is technical and not very socially, not very social based. So I think one of the most social professions is healthcare. Like, I mean, especially, well, in the hospital, hospice, nursing homes, people are at their most vulnerable places in life. And they need, when people are at vulnerable places in life, they need excellent communicators. They need excellent people who are very emotionally sensitive and intelligent and able to communicate in ways that, is special, because that is a special time, especially in acute care. I mean, like, these people aren't intending to be in the hospital. They're just there, right? And and so during that time, they really need that kind of emotional support. All that to say, I think training in that area and for older adults especially can really be useful.
Yeah, so very true. It occurred to me that for some older adults, probably the places they might look forward to going to are the grocery store and for some sort of medical care, because that's when they have an opportunity to actually talk to people if they are lonely. And well, I read about, I think it was in Denmark, a grocery store had lines for people who wanted to chat more, and they hired special cashiers to work in those lines who were really good at talking with people. So the older people who came there to socialize could go in the slow lines and not feel pressured or rushed, and just chat with the cashier as they were checking out. It breaks my heart that we need to do that, but that's how we need to be thinking. How can we, in any venue, help make this problem of isolation better?
Absolutely. I think that it when people do, I think that's such a wonderful approach. When people do that, the what comes back is just in dividends. It's incredible. It's hard to quantify. And but it's a positive thing that's hard to quantify. And when I think when those things are embedded in the culture, it really can make a really large difference in healthcare, in the healthcare world. I feel like there are just minute shifts that could take place that could really shift things. I think when it comes to staff and burnout, and for managers, they think about retention of healthcare staff, from nurses to social workers, physicians, et cetera, is finding providing a safe place and learning how to make safe places for people to share and talk about things that are difficult to share. I really want to create courses for that because we are the safe places. So like it could be a physical structure, because that's another thing that I'd love to change too is, when I go and visit my wife whenever I'm allowed to or able to, I see that nurses don't have a place to really share anything. They have to go to like the break room or something. I don't think a break room should be the only place where you can actually go and have discussions that it could be interprofessional as well, and you feel safe to talk, and a patient's not just going to walk by or accidentally come in or whatever. I mean, it's amazing that there isn't some place like that. It's like if someone had a blueprint and they said, here's our blueprint. Someone walks by, sees the blueprint, and says, there's you didn't make any bathrooms. I see there's no bathrooms in this building. And it's like, oh, no, that would take too much money, too much time. I don't think we really have the time or money to do that. And they're like, Oh, I think you don't have the time and money not to do that. And it's the same thing about, I almost call them emotional rooms, like emotional restrooms, so to speak, where people have an opportunity to share, because I don't think we can afford not to have those kind of environments. And Medicare, there was a study in 2017 showing that loneliness costs Medicare to seven $6.7 billion annually. That was 2017. That was before the pandemic. So, I mean,
Wow.
it's not funny at all. But like that, it's ridiculous. But that's because we're losing a lot of money because we're not being intentional. And I think that intentionality helps provide that social connection that we need.
It's so true. We need the awareness, and then we need to each one of us, even individually, to be intentional about making things better wherever we are. But I'd like love to hear more about your program to Legacy and what it consists of and how you designed that.
Absolutely. So yeah, after the pandemic, and I heard about older adults who were socially isolated and alone, I wanted to do something about it. And I had a curriculum, and that was focused on helping underserved students. And but the purpose of it was to help build that self-efficacy and resiliency, et cetera. So I decided to shift that focus towards older adults. I wanted to help older adults. So I started to contact life enrichment directors of nursing homes. And I started to ask them, hey, why don't you try out this exercise, this? And they said they tried it. It was great. But I was like, I can't lead these myself, and I can't just ask them to do these exercises. And life enrichment directors can be busy. So I said, let's make this intergenerational. And who, what other group could be really good for working with the older adults? And I was like, oh my gosh, healthcare students, the healthcare students that are going to be going to this field anyway, that it just made sense. And when they're students, a lot of them need the volunteer hours. I didn't realize, I wasn't a geriatric professor at the time, so I didn't realize that students in healthcare fields don't get a lot of opportunities to actually interact with older adults before they get out there in the field. I was a little surprised, but glad that I had the idea, before I got in. And so that to me, I'm still grateful for that. So anyway, the students, university students, healthcare fields, they're matched with older adults. They meet once a week and listen to the stories of the older adult. Beforehand, we train them using my curriculum, which I can go into. But the students meet once a week via phone, virtually, or in person now. When we first started, it wasn't in person. But and then after 4 to 8 weeks, we have enough content to give the older adult a legacy book, which summarizes the stories that the older adults shared with the student, to reinforce that their story matters. Their story is one to be told, and they matter. So, and after the words, they can continue on, with the student, et cetera. But at least we have enough content at that point to give them a legacy book. So that's the cusp of our program.
Oh, I love that idea. I love that so much. Now, for your program, are the students and the older people all reside in your community, so they're all local?
We've been fortunate to work with about 42 different universities and over 40 different communities. I call assisted living communities, or nursing homes, memory care communities. So, and in multiple states. So, I started the program before I became a professor. So, we do it also in the North Dakota, and it's a thing here, and I'm happy about that. But it can take place in any state in the, and we've worked with universities in Canada as well.
Oh, I see. So you could be pairing up two individuals who live in opposite parts of the country and who could meet virtually and form a relationship in that
Yeah.
way.
And it can be
Wow.
meaningful because a lot of times when people are objective, and they just are meeting, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, to learn from each other, learn of each other and from each other. So.
Yeah, and I know you write about cross-cultural learning too, and just how much we could learn by sitting and listening to the stories of someone who grew up completely differently than we did and who has different traditions and culture.
Yeah, I really want to help impact the every person's understanding of cross culture, of even the term culture, because a lot of times when we say culture or hear culture, we think of maybe race, right? Or we just think of, culture is this indigenous thing, like there's got to be some really old landmark somewhere, and we have to put those up so that people understand this is about culture. But culture is just each person's different lived experience. Like everybody's lived experience, it's growing, it's our family, it's the family we grew up in, it's the schools we grew up in, it's the state. My alma mater has a different culture, my university has a different culture than the University of North Dakota, and those are cultures. So the students have a culture that they're bringing in, and the older adults have a culture that they're bringing in, and what we're doing is learning from both of those. I think some students, unfortunately, like I talk about this because I speak on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and a lot of times you have, someone who, for example, is maybe they're Black. Let's just use my race. They're a Black. They're talking about their experience. And sometimes it's presented in a way that says, if you guys don't understand my Black culture, then you don't understand culture at all. And it also says that if someone has a Slavic background, that's not really culture. White people, they don't really have a culture, and that's not true at all. I'm in North Dakota. So, like, there's a lot of rich culture here, Germanic culture, there's just a lot here that is culture. Like everyone has their own, and it all belongs on the table. And that's what happens when students meet with older adults, is they're both learning from each other. It's not an interview where a student's just not sharing anything, but just kind of getting information. No, because they have to share something too, that means that they're both on the same plane, and we can see each other as human beings. And I'm not just doing an assignment here. I'm here to share about my life and listen to you.
Oh, I love that. It's so beautiful. I can just imagine for the older people are sharing their stories, but also sharing life wisdom with young people who may be really benefiting from that. And what a way to increase self-esteem and feeling valued in the world, because it is true, our older population, it's such has such a wealth of knowledge and wisdom that goes wasted so often because there's nobody to listen, nobody to ask them the right questions.
And just to reinforce, that's one of the things we do in our curriculum is train students to reinforce the value of the individual story. We take time to say, this is how you respond when they say something. And it's reinforcing, for example, if they talk about something they've been through that was difficult, we train the students to respond by saying, wow, that. And they basically respond with appreciation. They say, wow, that just the fact that you went through all that and you're here telling me this is incredible, and I really appreciate that. I think that sometimes when we don't introduce things intentionally, we think it's going to happen by osmosis. And then what really happens is we're training people to ignore that aspect of the conversation, because that's what we're doing in our training. So I try to put it in, to the training because that's how important I think it is.
Is the telegacy curriculum a required part? Is it an elective or like a required part of the training?
It's a required part for the students to go through. They need to complete the training, sign that they've completed it, and then they can start, because that to me is really it's sharing. I think a lot of folks how do I say this? Like, historically, I think that it would be great to teach curriculum and what curriculum actually is. Curriculum is culture. Every course is really reinforcing a culture. And I don't think students, when they walk into a classroom, they don't think about that. They might, but I know I didn't. So what I understand that they have to get training because they have to know what the culture is of to legacy, and what is the culture, what do we want to impact regarding culture. If there's no training, then we don't know what we're impacting. We might not be impacting what we want to impact. So we have to be intentional. And that's another thing. A lot of not just not-for-profits, but there's a lot of organizations and interventions that don't have curriculum. And so when they don't have curriculum, that's the kind of thing that happens is there's it's hard to know what are we impacting culturally. And I don't mean, the culture that's traditionally what we think. How are we impacting people's lives for the better? If there's no curriculum, it's hard to really, everybody's kind of making it up, like you ever, McDonald's was successful because they had a really solid curriculum. Basically they called it something else, but that's really what it was. And so that's the impact that I think healthcare needs to.
Definitely. And I'm curious what kind of feedback you've received from students who've been part of the program.
Yeah, one of the things I didn't even think about, but when I started to write some of these manuscripts and for publications and everything, I realized that, I didn't even know that retention was a thing. Like when it came to the older adults and students, it didn't occur to me that intervention that students and participants would drop out. I mean, I thought, oh, well, I just think ahead of time to plug in and put in things that would cause them to stay. And we haven't had any problems with that students because there is this, it was already, I don't like I shouldn't say I don't like selling. Like I know what selling is now, so like I it's okay. But what I like to do is put things into a program so that you don't have to sell them on it. It speaks for itself, and I don't mean selling money-wise. I mean communicating to people the value of something. Because sometimes we say sell, there's connotations that go
Yeah.
show in your mind.
Yeah.
What I mean was, how do you effectively communicate the value of what this is to students and to older adults? If you put it in the actual program, they're like, oh, there's no conversation that has to take place. I say all of that to say it's been positively received. Older adults, are and I shouldn't be saying it like we started the program, it was perfect from the beginning. Like there were definitely things that we had to tweak. Like for example, we saw it useful to remind older adults of the book because sometimes they just enjoyed the conversations and we wanted to let them remind them, oh, this is why we're doing this and everything. And students, they had to be reminded of some things of, like to let us know about hours if they need the hours that, and how to toggle those. And yeah, there's different things, but older adults have adopted students as their grandchildren. Students have adopted the older adults as their grandparents. One student said, the most important person in my life was this older adult that I met with. And I thought that was really fascinating because that person could have said the most important person during the semester to get me through the exams or something, but in their entire life is really big. There's been a lot of, and older adults have felt more comfortable with technology. Some of them messaged their grandchildren on Facebook for the first time because the student helped them, navigate online and everything. So it's been really good. So another student said that their it gave them perspective to not be in a rush all the time. They don't have to be in a hurry, and they can appreciate life a lot more. They learn that from their older adult partner. And another thing is they appreciated just life in general, and they saw an older adult as who they really are, and that's a human being, a person. I have young kids, and my young kids have dreams. They have hopes. And older adults, I know from working with older adults that they're the same as they were when they were two or three. Like, we're all the same throughout. We're human beings from the beginning and end. We don't like become a different species or something like later. We have the same hopes, dreams. We want to connect with people. We want to make a difference. We want to help people. My son is 3 years old. He loves helping. He loves helping us with in the kitchen. He loves helping us, with whatever we're doing, with the game that we're playing. And I know that that's just him. And 97, he's gonna be the same, like that's my goal, like to help him to just be who he is. So anyway, those are the things that we're finding through this program.
I really love the whole thing, and I was thinking about how amazing for those young people, first of all, who have had the opportunity to get close to an older person, and as you said, really to slow down because that is what's required to hear someone's story. You just have to go slower, and they're in school studying, and they're used to everything being hectic and at a really fast pace, and then learning from the wisdom of an older person, but also to just accept the idea that we all become older, because I think of how many of us have kind of rejected old age, and we don't even imagine or see in ourselves that that's where we're all headed. We will all be there ourselves one day. Then we don't prepare ourselves for it, and we don't embrace the wholeness of our lives in a way if we've been taught that there's something awful about our older years, so we don't think about it and we reject it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the reason why I shared earlier is social media doesn't help, even though it can, if we're intentional with social media, because the algorithm doesn't care. But the thing is, a lot of people just scroll, especially younger folks. They're just scrolling, and I mean, everybody does, not just younger folks. But like, the problem with that is there's language that's on social media that, for example, they'll say, this is how this actor, look at this actor when they were in their prime. Or they'll say, look at this athlete when they were in their prime. But the actor or musician, they there's music, I've seen them all. And I haven't seen them all, but I've seen enough. And that's like, that was weird to me, because I'm like, well, right now they're still in the and they're in a prime. It's in a different prime. We're in a prime every single day of our lives. Every day is prime. I should put that on a t-shirt or something. But like, but for someone who's might not have like the geriatric, experience, or maybe they haven't interacted with a lot of older adults before, they could just be like, oh, that communicates to me that there's only this period is when someone's in a prime. And I'm like, oh, there needs to be a class right now to teach people who are experiencing these things online outside of classroom about that.
It's so true. I'm just thinking of my own experience on social media. You don't very often see older people portrayed in a really positive light, it seems to me. It's primarily a place where younger people go, I guess. I mean, part of that is like people not being savvy with the technology of it, but still, it fosters more of the biases that we already have.
Absolutely. And so one of the things I share in diversity, equity, inclusion workshops is because it was just recent, it was like maybe a month ago, someone said something like, yeah, we need to we need diversity, equity, inclusion, and to learn about that. But what about people that aren't interacting with people from different racial backgrounds? And I was like, oh man, okay. So what I shared after that was, the most important thing about diversity and inclusion, I mean the pure aspects of diversity and inclusion, not the hijacked versions, but the pure essence of DE&I is that we learn how to talk about people that are different from us when we're around people that are the same as us. So,
Mm.
like, that's the most important time to understand diversity, equity, inclusion is when I'm talking with someone who I think is similar to me. So, for example, on social media, when there's young people looking at a lot of young people, there needs to be training for young people in elementary, junior high, high school, and college about
Oh.
culture. I think that can be like embedded in there because when we're around our same people, so I think it's important.
Yeah, oh, that's so well said, and something that hadn't occurred to me before. And it's interesting that even I, as a boomer woman aging myself, I don't always have the comfort on social media of putting my picture there or just being myself because I feel like, well, no one would ever watch this or look at this. If it's just me, I can put text there that people will read if they don't know who I am or how old I am. And I realize I feel that. I feel that kind of bias that exists there. And so it is really important that we become aware of it. And just in our own day-to-day lives, we work on becoming inclusive, as you were saying.
And that's one thing that I'm always working on myself every day is understanding my cultural, how do I say this, who I am is valuable to others. Because a lot of times when, you're around, you know you and you're like, well, there's nothing more that I could share because we're thinking of ourselves as ourselves. Like, I already know everything about myself. I don't know what else I could really share with anyone else. But the truth is, a lot of people don't know a lot of the aspects of us that is so enriching for other people. And so I don't know, I'm in this practice stepping outside of myself. A lot of times when I share a post on social media, it's almost the practice of stepping outside of myself to share about myself to other people so that I can authentically share it in a way that's really enriching, that doesn't involve my, I don't know, I was going to say ego, but my apprehension,
I like that idea. That makes sense of stepping outside yourself to have that comfort level of sharing what you share. And I was curious about from what I read online, like some of the tools that you use in your program, teaching about a growth mindset and mindfulness. If you could tell us a little bit more about the tools you use as part of the curriculum.
Absolutely. Yeah, the four components of the curriculum are mindfulness, growth mindset, visualization and goal setting, and reminiscence therapy. So the purpose behind that is first to help students and everyone that is in our program to appreciate their present, and that's mindfulness, appreciate their past, growth mindset. Who am I becoming? Who am I? What did I learn from my past? And then also who they are becoming in the future. And that's goal setting and visualization, right? But it's all this intentional approach, that I think can be have a positive impact for those because when one starts thinking that way, it's contagious in a good way, and it can help whoever we're interacting with also have those same, I guess, levels of appreciation. We're never staying on one level. We're always going higher, higher and higher. That's my goal of appreciation. Appreciation is an art, a skill, and a privilege. It's like we appreciate. There is one professor. His name escapes. Tom's his first name, but I'll have to give you his name, but he actually focuses his studies on appreciation, helping his patients to appreciate their dementia or their circumstance and where they're in. And he's seen it make a difference. And I was so fascinated with that. I had it in our curriculum before, but after that, I was like, it made me appreciate more why we have it in our program. So that's the purpose behind the curriculum.
I really like that. And those are lifelong tools that will serve everyone every day from now on when they learn to take that approach.
And that's one of the things I like. I have my own approach at holistic care. When I say holistic, I mean I want to learn principles and skills that I would use with anyone to help better my life and their life. Because truth of the matter is, when we go into work, we're that same person that we were outside of work, really. And so it's best to just be intentional and say, okay, what are the things I can practice outside of work that I can bring in and help people in work with? And it's these kind of principles, I think, that these kind of skills that it doesn't matter where you are, and it helps you, it helps every person in their workplace to be to it, it's like it's an integrity tool. It's a tool of being one person wherever you go, and knowing that that one person is what people need. I think that that can be really powerful and have an impact.
Yeah, and the idea of being your true self, because that is what the world needs. They need each one of us to be authentic and just bring whatever gifts we have into the world.
Yes. A curriculum of authenticity. That's what I call the curriculum that we made a curriculum of listening, but really it's hope we hope that it's helping folks to be authentic, more authentic.
Yeah. So this curriculum is for healthcare students. How does a program go about implementing it? Like, how do they get in touch with you and to set something like this up?
Absolutely. And it's also for, professional and personal caregivers and staff. We have a version of it for staff as well, because the program is could be best used as an orientation program. I'm on another paper here that we're working on that and there's studies that show that the most lonely individuals in nursing homes are the ones that just moved in for the first month to 5 months. That's a very lonely time for them. Why not put in an orientation program in which they can connect with someone, and that person can listen to their story, learn from them, and they become less lonely, and they maybe their staff learns a little bit more about them, and there's a lot of connection that could be made. But they can connect with me and get to know the program more by going to legacy.org, TELLEGACY. There's some email there, but you can also email me. I have a lot of emails, but one of them is jeremy.holloway@telegacy.org. Or I'm a professor too, so jeremy.holloway@UND, University of North Dakota, .edu. Or you can just Google Jeremy Holloway to Legacy and I will come up. So
So it sounds like you help institutions like implement the curriculum, give them the curriculum and can teach them how to best use it, perhaps with their staff or with their students.
yes, I do a lot of speaking and consulting, so I definitely provide that. Our email and our website can help connect with the team, and if they want to adopt the program themselves, then they can go to the website, and then we would contact them. And we're a very socially engaging program, so we contact and have this conversation.
What kind of feedback have you heard from institutions or organizations that have used the curriculum?
It's been really cool. One insurance company that adopted the program, they noticed that there was a drop in doctor visits, that the only visits that they had were not behavioral health related. And the only difference that they told us that was because of our program. And I thought that was very interesting. The percentage was high. It was like 90% or something. It was good. We have Meals on Wheels that have adopted the program, and older adults have had a decreased sense of we did the UCLA loneliness version 2 scale. And so it showed that there's a significant decrease in social isolation and loneliness. And this Meals on Wheels is, telling everybody about it because it's exciting when the folks that they're serving are is feeling that way and getting a book where, we have video of them saying, "I'm living my legacy. I'm leaving my legacy." Like, we didn't tell them to say that, they said it, and that was great. So there's a lot of stories, a lot of things that folks are saying I'm really excited about. So we want to get the program to as many folks as we can.
Yeah, oh, that's really wonderful. And I wanted to ask more about the book because I forgot to ask that before. So do you record the stories and then transcribe them, or do the students write the stories?
Yeah, so with the older adults, they sign up for the whole thing. So the students, they record the sessions, and then they take notes. They can also, if they're, they use one of our recommended tools, they can take notes as well. But they record and later take notes, and then they share their notes with our team, and then our team creates the legacy book. And we ship it out to the older adult.
Wow. Now, what a great gift that is, that the older adult gets to have that book of stories, and then they can share those stories with their own loved ones and offspring too from the book. Like, that's really amazing.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. It's really, feel privileged and grateful to be a part of something like this, and it's just the beginning. So, we're working on some other curricula as well and training tools that will help a lot of healthcare staff, especially in the social regarding social determinants of health equity and these kind of things that I haven't quite yet seen the trainings that we can provide. So I'm excited about it.
That's really exciting. And as I said before, with just my own personal experience in healthcare education, I would love to see every healthcare institution that's teaching people have a program like this, because really it would change so much about how we offer care to people of all ages and how we look at those patients. And I just think, I mean, every doctor in practice out there could benefit if they had learned how to spend a few moments listening and how to ask the right questions and just show patients that they are valuable and worthy.
Yeah, and I think the best time is when they're students preparing, because when they get out there, it's a challenge because of the work schedule or different things, but if they have already had the experience, it can be so easy. It can be so much easier to implement it into their work schedules, and then it's can be more seamless, and they can continue to develop those skills. But it's hard to get the skills and develop them on your own while you're trying to manage a profession, and you got your life outside of that too. So
Yeah, so very true. I don't know, an image came in my mind of somehow, like, for patients in waiting rooms, which when I look at clinics, doctor's offices, hospitals, patients spend a lot of time in waiting rooms. And it would be really nice if there was some way to interact with them there, if there were listeners, trained listeners in the waiting room that would just greet people and sit and chat with them while they're waiting. What a perfect time to listen
wow.
to some of their stories.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really, really good. I mean, yeah, there's even like just little surveys, to get to know the individual more that they could do there, but then to have that interaction where you would get so much more enriched information, I think could be Really, really useful. That's a great point. Maybe we'll try to implement something like that.
Well, yeah, there's so much need. There are lots of, I'm sure, lots of creative ideas out there around what you could do. I'm just so impressed with what you've done already, and that all of this started back during March 2020, when I think all of us were kind of devastated when we heard stories of people dying alone, and people who have already felt isolated becoming even more isolated. And I'm so impressed that you have done something about it. You felt called by that, and you're changing the world, and that really impresses me.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be, and I'm thankful for my family with the support of my wife and, the folks here at where I'm living. So, I try to be grateful for those that help make all these things happen. So.
Well, I want to remind our listeners, I'm talking with Jeremy Holloway, and his website is jeremyholloway.com. There's also the website telegacy.org, and telegacy has two L's. And please check this out and reach out if you're interested in implementing the telegacy curriculum wherever you happen to work. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Karen. It is such an honor to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad we got connected, and I look forward to just following your work and seeing where it goes.
Absolutely. It's going to be a powerful year.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Jeremy Holloway. I was so excited to hear about his telegacy curriculum and really thrilled to know that he is utilizing healthcare students as the cohort that he's bringing into his studies. And I think it's a fantastic way to educate young healthcare students about geriatrics, about relating to older people in a positive way. And I think this is going to go very far in terms of improving some of the social isolation we have in our society, but also making sure that we are educating young healthcare providers to be more sensitive and compassionate toward older individuals whom they may be caring for. So I find this project exciting. Maybe you'll think of a way you would like to bring it into your facility or your workplace, or a way you could collaborate with Jeremy. So he offered us his email address, which you'll find in the show notes as well. And I encourage you to reach out and see if there's a way to come together and utilize his research and the curriculum he's already created for Telegacy. And I'll remind you that if you enjoy listening to content like this, please share it with other people who might also benefit from listening in to the podcast. You can show them how to subscribe and make sure you've subscribed, and also leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen. Remember too that I have a YouTube channel. It's also named EOL University. You'll find it on YouTube. If you like watching videos, you can go there and see the videos of my guest and me chatting with each other for whatever that's worth to you. But I know some people really do enjoy watching videos. So check us out on YouTube, and there will be links in the show notes once again to go to the YouTube channel. I'll be back next week with another interesting interview. My guest will be Sensei Koshin Paley Ellison, and we'll be talking about contemplative practices for death and grief. And you'll really enjoy this very thoughtful, heartfelt conversation, I'm sure. So tune in next week for that. And once again, if you're interested in making a small contribution to keep this podcast on the air, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support. There you'll find a link to my Patreon page, but also to buy me a coffee and to PayPal. So there are three different ways you can make a small contribution if you'd like to offer your support. And I really appreciate it in advance if you choose to do that. So until we're together next week, remember that we're here for love. That is really what this lifetime is all about. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.